Turn it over to Amy Storm, Land Reclamation Coordinator of the EPA Office of Brownfields and Revitalization, who will kick things off. Amy?
Thanks, Abe. Welcome, everyone. We're getting a nice big crowd here for our Build Act webinar. We want to welcome you all and thank you for joining us. Today, what we're going to be doing is talking through some of the key provisions that came along as part of the 2018 Build Act, which passed on March 23rd. So I'm going to be helping with this presentation along with my colleagues from EPA's Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization, and we'll be walking you through these provisions. So first up, we have Patricia Overmeyer, our Acting Deputy Director. She's going to start things off for us. Thanks. Oh, and one last thing. We are recording this, and we'll send the archive out later.
Thank you, Amy, and thanks, everyone, for your interest and for joining us today. As you know, the Build Act, or the Brownfields Utilization Investment and Local Development Act of 2018, as Amy said, was passed in March as part of the omnibus budget bill by Congress. And if anyone is interested in finding the actual language in the Omnibus Act, it's Division N, and it begins on page 1,768 of the Omnibus Bill. So today we are going to walk you through a bit of an overview of the Build Act and the provisions of the Build Act that will affect, in particular, the Brownfields Grant Program. Get into a little information that we can give you about the implementation of the different provisions, keeping in mind that we are still working through the policy aspects of the statutory amendments, and we'll delineate those implementation issues as we go along today. We'll have some information for you today about an upcoming Federal Register notice where we will be soliciting your input and the input of our communities and stakeholders that will be affected by these changes, and in particular, the provisions governing the grants portions of the Build Act. And at the end, we'll provide some time for Q&A. Next slide, please. Okay, the three subtitles of the legislation, of course. Subtitle A deals with the Brownfields revitalization of funding. Subtitle B has to do with liability provisions, and Subtitle C is the state response programs. Each of the subtitles of the Brownfields amendments to CERCLA were affected by the Build Act, and as I said, we'll go through each of these individually. Okay, so just a little bit first about the ownership and liability amendments that were made by the Build Act to CERCLA and as it was amended by the Brownfields Amendments of 2002. So in particular, and one of the major amendments to CERCLA was the Build Act amended Section 101.20D of the statute, and modified the instances when government entities will be exempt from liability when acquiring ownership or control of a property, particularly by virtue of its function as sovereign. In particular, the language now in 101.20D that provides an exemption from the definition of owner operator and therefore an exemption from liability for state and local governments that are acquired property will include the cases where a state or local government acquires property through seizure, other local enforcement activity, bankruptcy, tax delinquency, abandonment, and other circumstances in which the government entity acquires property by virtue of its function as sovereign. In these instances where a local government or state government is exempt from the definition of owner-operator and therefore exempt from liability under CERCLA, these entities will now be eligible for Brownfields funding and Brownfields grants without having to show that they are bona fide prospective purchasers or provide information regarding the affirmative defense to liability. There is an exemption. The Act, the Build Act also amended Section 10120 of CERCLA to provide relief for Alaska Native villages and Native corporations. This is of particular importance to our friends in Alaska, particularly since, as many of you may know, that under the Alaska Native Claims Act, Native villages and Native corporations in Alaska may obtain ownership from the federal government or have properties given back to them. And sometimes those properties may be contaminated, but they're not contaminated due to any fault or reason on the part of the Native villages or Native corporations, but in fact perhaps the federal government or some other entity is responsible for the contamination. So this provision, this amendment to 10120 of CERCLA, allows for Alaska Native villages and Native corporations, when they acquire these properties from the federal government, they will not be held liable for the contamination as long as they did not cause or contribute to the contamination, and these entities now will be eligible for brownfields grants without having to show that they're a bona fide prospective purchaser or any other of the liability exemptions under, or defenses under CERCLA, sorry. Another important addition, amendment that the Build Act provides to CERCLA is to add an exemption for certain publicly owned sites with regard to grant eligibility. And again, this is grant eligibility only, but the statute now provides that in the cases where state and local governments acquire properties prior to January 11th of 2002, as you know, January 11, 2002 is the date on which President Bush signed the Brownfields Amendment to CERCLA, and that's the date on which the bona fide prospective purchaser provision was enacted as part of CERCLA. Previously, the bona fide prospective purchaser provision does not apply to properties that were purchased prior to January 11, 2002. And our Brownfields grant applicants had to show prior that they were bona fide prospective purchasers in order to be eligible for Brownfields grants, for cleanup grants and revolving loan fund grants. Congress has now fixed that. And in fact, as long as the local government or the state government, the government entity that is applying for the grant is not, has not caused or contributed to the contamination, they are eligible for a Brownfields grant. So these entities will no longer have to show that they meet the affirmative defense. They no longer show that they are a bona fide prospective purchaser. They are eligible for the Brownfields grant. Then one other thing that we'd like to note, another provision with regard to ownership and liability that was made by the Build Act, is there was a revision to Section 10140. Section 10140 is the definition of bona fide prospective purchaser. Within the definition of bona fide prospective purchaser, Congress has included within that definition tenants or leasehold tenants or entities with leasehold interest in a property. This is basically a codification of EPA's tenants policy, but now makes it clear that tenants and leasehold leaseholders or entities with leasehold interest, are eligible for the bona fide prospective purchaser affirmative defense under CERCLA. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Rachel Lentz of our office.
Thank you. And moving on to slide five, we'll go through the Build Act amendments related to our competitive grant programs. So first, we've expanded eligibility, so nonprofit organizations and limited liability corporations are now eligible for all of our competitive grants, and that's been expanded for 501c3 nonprofits to be eligible for our assessment grants and our revolving loan fund grants. Nonprofits were already eligible for our cleanup and technical assistance grants, so we're now expanding that. Second, the Build Act amended how much money can be per site per cleanup grant. It used to be capped at $200,000 per site, and now that has been amended to up to $500,000 per site with a provision for a waiver up to $650,000 based on size, level of contamination, or ownership status. Next, a new grant program was established for multi-purpose grants, and that could allow for planning, assessment, or remediation activities all to occur under one grant. There is a provision in the Build Act that no more, that the grants are capped at $1 million per community, and that no more than 15% of the total appropriation could be spent on this grant program. And also, if money was going to be used for remediation, the grantee would need to own the site before spending remediation dollars at the property. Congress also added two new ranking criteria for our grant programs, one related to properties located on waterfront or in federally designated floodplain areas, and another related to energy, how to facilitate energy efficiency, or locating sites for renewable energy on brownfield sites. The administrative cost prohibition was removed. Prior to the Build Act, there was an administrative cost prohibition that our grant funds could not be used towards administrative costs, and now it's capped at 5% of the grant award. And the funding has been reauthorized at $200 million through 2023. And moving on to the amendments related to the State and Tribal Response Program. And so we've added a new grant authority for our states and tribes to provide training, technical assistance, or research on behalf of a small or disadvantaged communities as defined by the Build Act. They define small communities as those with a population of 15,000 or less, and also have define what it means to be a disadvantaged area, which is a community with an annual median household income less than 80% of the statewide annual median household income by the most recent census. And so the grant recipient for this new program would be the state or tribe, and the beneficiary would be a community that meets these new statutory definitions of small and disadvantaged community. And also the state and tribal response program grants have been reauthorized at $50 million through 2023. Next slide really quickly. As we went through, with the Build Act being passed in March, we looked through what can be immediately implemented and what will be implemented in future years. So for starting with our most recent cohort of grant recipients that were announced this spring, we are amending our terms and conditions so that those awardees can spend up to 5% of their award on administrative costs, and to reflect the revised definition of petroleum brownfields, that petroleum brownfields no longer need to be evaluated as a relatively low risk compared to other petroleum sites in the state. One note about that, for anyone who has an existing grant awarded at FY17 or earlier, your terms and conditions are what are governing those cooperative agreements, those grants, and so the administrative prohibition applies to grants awarded in FY17 or earlier, and as well as the petroleum definition, where you also have to, we're including a relatively low risk because those are listed out in the terms and conditions. And then next slide. Moving forward for what we're working on, starting to work on for our FY19 grant guidelines, our target release date, people are aware, is fall of 2018, is that as we go out in FY19 for our assessment competition, that nonprofits that are 501c3s or limited liability corporations will be eligible. Our cleanup grants, because the statutory cap of $200,000 has been increased to $500 for one or more sites, we are looking at policies of how to implement this new change, and those will be implemented within FY19. And lastly, we will start incorporating the new statutory ranking criteria into our FY19 ranking criteria related to sites adjacent to body of water or federally designated plants or related to energy efficiency. So we're going to pause for a minute to see, make sure everyone
can see the slide. Slide, if you're following along on the phone, we're going to be on slide 9. And we're working on the screen if you can't see it. We think most of you can see it, though. What was that? We're going to keep on going. I think all of you can see the slide. Sorry
okay.
for the interruption.
And now I'll turn it back over to Amy Storn to talk about slide 9.
Okay. Great. Hi, everyone. I want to share with you some information about the multipurpose grant, the new provision for the multipurpose grant. And as Rachel said, we have this new provision in Section 104K4 to have a new grant program that will carry out inventory characterization, assessment planning, or remediation activities for one or more brownfield sites in the area. This grant is a max up to $1 million, and no more than 15% of the total appropriation can be awarded to multipurpose grants. So what this means, just to give you all an idea, is this year our appropriation for 104K was $80 million, and so had we had the authority to do multipurpose grants, we would have been able to award no more than $12 million for multipurpose grants. So, and if we had decided to award all of them at $1 million, that would have been 12 grants in total across the country. So just to give you an idea of what the scale of this program can be. And we do have up to a 5 years period of performance for these grants. So in terms of criteria, in addition to all the 10 statutory criteria that we had before the Build Act, the two new criteria that the Build Act gave us, there are three more criteria that we need to look at when it comes to establishing the multipurpose grant program. And so they're listed here for you on the slide, but the first is around an overall plan for revitalization of one or more brownfield sites in a proposed area, how the grantee has the capacity to conduct the range of eligible activities, and then finally how the grant will actually meet the needs of one or more brownfield sites in the area. So those are the additional criteria that we'll be looking at, and then also this was mentioned before, but just to be really clear that the any funds spent for cleanup have to be the entity has to own the site before they can spend any funds on cleanup. I'll stop there. And then the next provision, key provision, is on small community technical assistance grants. So I'll turn it back over to Rachel Lentz.
Thank you. And as I briefly mentioned earlier, the Build Act created a new grant authority under 128A to use 104K funding to four states and tribes to provide training on behalf of a small community or disadvantaged area as defined by the Build Act, and we are looking to figure out how to implement that and pilot that starting in the FY19 State and Tribal Response Program allocation process. And now I'll turn it over to Megan Quinn to talk about next steps in soliciting stakeholder input.
Hi, everybody. So we've just gone over a little bit about what we are thinking about in terms of our implementation of the Build Act. There are still a lot of policy decisions to be made, and we will be working this summer on finalizing those decisions. But first, we want to hear from you, our communities, and our stakeholders who will be affected by this implementation. So we will be posting in the next couple of weeks a Federal Register notice, and we will be posing approximately 6 key questions on the 3 provisions that Amy and Rachel just touched on, and asking some key questions about those provisions to get your input on how we can best implement these changes. we will have a two-week response period, and we ask that you submit any responses to our questions directly to this Build Act at EPA.gov. That's buildact at EPA.gov. And we will review the comments, but we will not be responding to comments, and we're not going to post them. This is really just to get some input on some of the key things that we need to keep in mind as we're developing our final implementation policy for the Build Act. Next slide. And so here, I'm not going to read these out to you, but just so you get an idea of what questions we'll be asking in the Federal Register notice, we'll, prior to its publication, post these questions on our website, epa.gov/brownfields. We hope to have those up by Friday afternoon. We'll send out a listserv notice and otherwise try to make you aware that those are posted. So you can begin to review them and start thinking about what sort of responses, if any, that you would like to provide. For the cleanup grant amount, we're asking a couple things for you to think about that we'd like your input on. One is, with a $500K cleanup grant, will you be able to make a 20% cost share? How will you meet that 20% cost share? One thing that Rachel alluded to that I will remind folks now is, there will be a lot less communities supported because doing more grants at a higher amount. So it's just, if you do things at 500 million or 500K per grant, there's just something to think about. So please keep that in mind as you're responding to the 20% cost share question. And then we also want to know how long the average brownfield cleanup is taking in your community and what types of barriers you are experiencing in getting your site ready to reuse. For the multi-purpose grant provision, we want you to think about the target area that you may want to focus on with a multi-purpose grant and what types of activities you'll be able to do with that multi-purpose grant. Will you want to use it more for planning? Will you want to use it more for assessment? Will you want to use it more for cleanup? How will you use that? We're also interested in what complications and barriers your community will could potentially face in the use of a multi-purpose grant and getting accomplishments out of that grant in its five-year term. And finally, for the 128A small grants, we provide some thinking in into how we're going to evaluate requests. So we would be interested in hearing, one, how your community or the state or the tribe would utilize one of these small community technical assistance grants, and then two, if there's any other evaluation factors EPA could consider when making these awards. And so again, these will be posted in the Federal Register notice and on EPA.gov on our website, and we encourage you to respond. We are very interested in hearing from this group your thoughts on implementation of these provisions. Okay, great, timeline. And then the last thing is just to give you, to give everyone a sense of our timeline. This summer, we're going to be finalizing policy decisions on cleanup grant funding amounts, on how we will issue the small community technical assistance grants, and also the timing on the multi-purpose grant option. We do not know when we will be able to kick off that competition, so still a lot to be decided there. But we will be deciding this summer, and we will certainly let folks know. Fall 2018, we will issue another round of FY19 assessment and cleanup grant guidelines and 128A state and tribal program allocation guidance. Expect it to be later in fall 2018. We're not talking September here because we still have a lot of policy issues to work out. Still on track to announce our new recipients in the spring of 2019. Excellent. Okay,
Thanks, everyone. This is Amy again, and we've had a lot of good questions come in. You see on our slide now just the recap, and go ahead, Patricia.
Yes, this is Patricia again. I just wanted to point out that we realize that people are a little confused about the BUILD Act. There seems to be two BUILD Acts. So we're not talking about overseas investments here. We're not talking about USAID, et cetera, not the independently named BUILD Act. This is
the DOT and Federal Highways one.
Or the DOT one.
Right. So basically, as I said in the beginning of the webinar, the BUILD Act that is the subject of our talk today and which affects CERCLA and the Brownfields program is Division N, N as in Nancy, of the Omnibus Bill, the spending bill, appropriations bill that was passed by Congress in March of 2018. It begins on page 1,768 of the Omnibus Bill. And BUILD, in this case, stands for Brownfields Utilization, Investment, and Local Development Act of 2018. So please take note, this BUILD Act is the Brownfields amendment to CERCLA, and it's part of the Omnibus Spending Bill of 2018, Section N. So thanks. With that, I'll turn it back over to Amy to facilitate questions.
Thanks for clarifying that, Patricia. Big year for BUILD Act legislation. Okay, we had several good questions come in, and so we want to use the balance of the time to go through them and answer them as best we can. Again, with just noting that still a lot of decisions to be made, that what we're sharing with you today is what the new law tells us, but there's still a lot of policy that has to go into the program. And we've got a nice little recap slide up there for you to take away the main points. I'm going to start with some of the questions that came in right off the get-go. The first one came in that was asking about relating to CERCLA 101-20D, does this include eminent domain?
This is Patricia. I would say at this point we're still figuring out the policy issues with regard to eminent domain. But most likely not, unless eminent domain would be defined as an involuntary acquisition. But in cases where local and state governments are exercising their power of eminent domain as part of entering the free market to purchase properties or doing something other than perhaps condemnation for public good, chances are that we would view eminent domain as not involuntary and not within the exclusion provided in 101-20D.
Yeah, I'll just add to that real quick. This is Craig Bohr from the Office of Cyber Mediation Enforcement. Eminent domain is a little confusing because if you're probably aware, it's currently listed in 101-35A as a defense to liability along with a sheet, and Congress decided not to move those two types of acquisitions over to 101-20D into the complete exemption from liability. So I think the Senate version of the bill actually intended to do that, but the final version did not, so there's still this defense to liability in 101-35A, which includes eminent domain acquisitions, and then the complete exemption from liability, which Patricia discussed earlier. And, yeah, I agree with her. We're still talking it over in our respective offices. But, yeah, I would say that early discussions point to eminent domain not being included in 101-21D if the eminent domain is to influence the public markets, but there may be some wiggle room that we can discuss if it's eminent domain acquisition in connection with law enforcement activity or seizure, which are also separately listed in 101-20D.
Thanks, Craig. Okay, a couple more questions. Moving on. Here's a question that asks, Will the new provisions apply to older grants that receive a no-cost time extension?
No.
No, this is Patricia. Basically, as Rachel explained during the presentation, for those grants where the grantee signed their cooperative agreement and agreed to the terms and conditions, those would be grants that were awarded prior to this year, prior to 2018. We are not going to go back and amend the terms and conditions for those grants.
Thank you. Okay, a question about the cleanup grants. And there was a question about the slide said that there would be a maximum of one cleanup grant per entity. And just wanted to understand that better since that's not the case right now. So that's just part of the thinking. That isn't something that is set in stone. However, we would not award more than one 500K grant per recipient. We will still offer a multi-site option under that one grant, but no recipient would receive more, no entity would receive more or could apply for more than one 500K cleanup grant if we go to that amount. In a single year. Yes, thank you. Great. Thank you. Okay, here's a question around the multi-purpose grant, and the question is, does the statute require that a grantee must own the site to use cleanup funding on a property under a multi-purpose grant? The answer is yes. If you're going to remediate the site, do cleanup on the site, the grantee must own the site, not the subrecipient, the grantee. That's something that we've been working with our general counsel to ensure that we're interpreting the language correctly. Okay, next question is, will funds be allocated to multi-purpose grants in FY19? I can't give you a definite yes. We would like to pilot it, for sure. We think it's an exciting new authority. But we have to see how FY19 plays out. The best answer I can give you. Okay, another question around multi-purpose grant. Is there a match requirement for the multi-purpose grant in terms of the cleanup grant part of the multi-purpose grant? I think that's a really good question. Right now we do have a cost share requirement for our cleanup grants, and EPA hasn't made this determination yet, but I could tell you that we are strongly leaning towards yes, including a cost share requirement for the cleanup portion of the multi-purpose grant. Okay, here's another question that we just got. Can a community apply for both an assessment grant and a multi-purpose grant in the same round? So we have not determined that yet because we do not know how these competitions will run. The timing-wise, however, we are leaning strongly to no. Communities are going to need to make a decision, should they apply for a multi-purpose grant or should they apply for an assessment grant. That's not final. That's what we're thinking and leaning on, and that's part of the policy that will be decided this summer. Thank you. Another question around multi-purpose grant, will there be any possibility of using the new granting mechanism for multi-purpose as an add-on to completed area-wide planning grants? I would answer that by saying we do not intend to limit multi-purpose grants to completed area-wide planning grants, but area-wide planning grantees would certainly be eligible to apply for their assessment and cleanup needs. Okay, question, what are the prospects of increased appropriations in the future? Good question.
Great question.
Well, probably for folks who I'm sure everyone is following appropriations excitedly. That was a joke. So right now the House mark is at $80 million. They were scheduled to, the subcommittee was scheduled to mark up our bill, did not. It has not been rescheduled yet that I am aware of, or maybe they're doing it this week or next. But so right now we're at $80 million in 104K. And $47.7 million in 128A, that is level funding from the past 5 years. We have not seen the Senate mark, but all indications, especially in an election year, are that we will maintain level funding. So right now, I would bet on level funding at $80 million for 104K, $47.7 million at 128A, and also bearing in mind that there will be a rescission. There is usually about a $2 million rescission. So this year in FY18, we worked with $78 million in 104K. So keep that in mind, too. We rarely, if ever, get actually $80 million. But, you know, looking about level, which is great news, haven't heard anything about increases.
Thank you. Okay, question on administrative costs. So, one of the presenters mentioned that recipients of FY18 grant awards can use up to 5% of the award for administrative costs. Since those grants have been awarded already, was that written into the original award, or is that a change made today? Can you clarify?
Right, so to clarify, the FY18 cohort has been announced, and they're working through awards right now. So the final award documents, including the terms and conditions, will be finalized shortly, and so the EPA project officer will be working with those recipients with, as they finalize their budgets and awards by the end of the fiscal year by September 30th. So that's something that will be happening over this summer.
Here's another question about administrative costs. Can administrative costs include legal fees associated with possible legal issues associated with brownfield projects?
Again, this is Rachel. Just generally, we are working with our attorneys about how to define administrative costs. Remember, they're capped statutorily at 5%, and how a grantee were to choose to allocate that, or recommend them to work with developing their work plan and budgets to work with their project officer. A more specific individual question.
Mm-hmm. And another question around just generally what the administrative cost provision covers. Do you have like a just generally like what's allowed now that wasn't allowed before?
This is Patricia. We are still working with council as to how we are going to define administrative costs, and as we pull together the terms and conditions for this round for the grants that will be awarded this year, the FY18 grants, we will be working with council to define administrative costs. And as soon as we have a definition, we will make it available. But at this point, I don't think that we can really go into any kind of detail on what exactly will be defined in administrative costs until we work that out with our grants attorneys.
Right, but adding on that, I think the most generally concept is your indirect rate. Previously, you could not charge your indirect rate at all to your brownfield cooperative agreements because it's an administrative cost, so that would be an example of something that you could now charge up to 5%.
Thank you. Okay, question about ownership and liability amendments. For grants prior to FY17, the grants prior to FY17, will ownership and liability amendments apply?
This is, it does, I can't think of a scenario where it even would be applicable since we've already awarded those grants. However, if in the case of revolving loan fund grants where loans have not yet been loaned out, yes, they would be applicable. In fact, the ownership provisions and amendments to the law would be applicable in those cases where the sites have not yet been identified, and in particular the revolving loan fund grants, those sites that fit the ownership requirements as stated in the law as it is now with the amendments, those amendments would apply.
Okay.
And again, this is Rachel. Part of that has to do with how our terms and conditions are spelled out, and they're much more broad as we talk, as they discuss not being liable under CERCLA 107, which is what these provisions relate to, and we just kind of have a blanket statement, so changes to CERCLA 107 liability don't affect terms and conditions or eligibility for active risk.
All right, thank you. Here's a question about multi-purpose grants. Can the multi-purpose grants include a significant amount of reuse planning, such as what we did with the area-wide planning grants, and will there be any future rounds of area-wide planning grants? So two questions there. In terms of what the multi-purpose grant can allow, yes, planning is an eligible activity under the multi-purpose grant, so it can include all planning if you want it to. And will there be any future rounds of area-wide planning grants? Right now we're not expecting that we'll have a specific grant program for area-wide planning.
And just a reminder, planning activities are an eligible activity under our community, our assessment grants, and that will continue moving forward.
Yes, they've always been, planning has always been an eligible activity under our assessment grant program. And so then the question is, will grant applications be competitive if they do planning, if they have fewer phase one and phase two assessments? Hopefully, yes. That's something that we are working through in terms of the guidelines and how we structure the guidelines. So, as always, grant applications are competitive based on how well they respond to the guidelines. All right, let's move on to, here's a question just about cleanup grants, not really specific to the Build Act, but can cleanup grants be used to remediate contaminated housing?
If it meets the definition of a brownfield site,
yeah,
and work with your project officer on that.
Yeah.
We have done.
Yep. Okay. Question about multi-purpose grant. It said, we presume this is a site-specific grant because of the ownership requirement. Could it possibly include multiple eligible properties owned by the grantee? For example, all eligible properties owned by a grantee, or can it be for only one property? This is for the multi-purpose grant is for one or more brownfield sites in a proposed area. So the answer to your question is it does not have to be for just one property. It can be for many properties, but if you want to do cleanup at any of those properties, you have to own all of those properties. I'm sorry. Yeah, if you want to do cleanup at any property, you have to own that property. Question, will there still be coalition grants?
Yes, we'll still be planning coalitions under the assessment and the revolving loan fund grant program.
Okay, great. Next question, will an RLF grantee receiving supplemental funding after 2018 be subject to the Build Act rule?
Yes, if you're adding new money to the RLF supplemental, your award agreement will have the most recent terms and conditions.
Okay. A question about job training. Will job training be eligible under multi-purpose grants?
No.
No, we do not see the language for job training in the multi-purpose grant statute. Okay. Let's see. Here's a question about we did talk about this already a little bit, but it says someone's just asking for clarification on whether they can submit an application for more than one type of grant during a year. So we will put out clear guidance on that once we know the timing of these competitions. Okay, there is a question that said, will EPA continue the area-wide planning grant competition separate from the assessment RLF cleanup multi-purpose grant competition? No, at this time we do not expect that we will have a separate area-wide planning grant competition. Okay. All right, more questions. Good questions, everyone. Here's one, let's see, about RLF. If a supplemental agreement is awarded to a pre-2018 RLF grantee, would the new Build Act provisions apply to the original or supplemental funds?
It would apply to everything.
It would apply to everything,
yeah. It'll apply to everything because the new award will have the new TNCs, but you still will maintain your balance from the original award.
Great. Thank you. Okay. Another question on clarifying the appropriation versus authorization question. Just, you know, to what extent has the Build Act, the money for the Build Act, actually been appropriated by Congress, and how realistic is the $250 million authorization?
Sure. This is Megan again. Authorization. So the Build Act was passed by an authorizing or proposed by an authorizing committee. They are not the people with the money. So even though they said we can have up to $200 million for 104K and up to $50 million for 128A, it is up to the appropriators as part of the budget-making process to actually give us the funds. So there is all indications for FY19 that we will have level funding, and as I said earlier, the House Appropriations Subcommittee has already put out their mark and or put out their draft bill, and it's at $80 million and 47.7. So that's where we are right now.
Thank you. Okay, a question about the 128A, the small community grant. Will the 128A grants for small communities be as competitive as the ARC competition?
I don't know. So first, the grant authority to award these grants is under 128A. And as our attorneys have interpreted the statute, that means we do not have to award those grants competitively because that the grant authority is an allocation. It's a non-competitive grant program. If demand exceeds, you know, the total amount of funds that we can spend out of it, $1.5 million or less, depending on our budget priorities, we will be deciding over the next few months of how we will be making decisions for who would get selected.
And so just to clarify, who is eligible to apply for the Small and Disadvantaged Community Grant Program?
So the grantees are going to be the states and tribes, like those who are going to be the prime grant recipients, but it's on behalf of a community that meets these definitions in the Build Act, so whether you have to be a small community, it's 15,000 or less, or meet the statutory definition of disadvantaged area, which is in like relation, poverty relation to state by the latest census. So it's a very specific definition of the communities that will be benefited from this funding.
So states and tribes, are they the only entities that can apply, such as like community, the disadvantaged community cannot apply themselves?
Correct. But what we're working on over the summer is like figuring out how to make sure that the small community or disadvantaged is interested in the support and would want the state or tribe to provide support on their behalf. And I think the thinking of this provision was that states and tribes have a lot of experience to help their communities, and this is a way to provide them some funding to provide some technical assistance on communities that need help on brownfields issues. So that's, I think, where this came from.
Great. Thank you. A few more questions. Will grantees still submit site eligibility forms to their state brownfields agency or submit them to EPA? So they would still be working with, I will answer that by saying you'll still be working with your EPA EPA region and your EPA brownfields project officer.
Right, and if it's related to petroleum, the state will still make the determination. Mm-hmm. We just revised
whether it's low risk.
A rule of risk, but everything else in the definition is the same.
Mm-hmm. This is about bona fide prospective purchaser. Can you speak a little more on the expansion of BFPP defense liability for tenants? More specifically, if a tenant relies on a lessor who is a BFPP, but the latter loses their BFPP because of a failure to meet compliance requirements, does the tenant need to make an effort to meet the compliance requirements?
This is Craig. Yes, they do. The update to the 1140 BFPP provision more or less codifies our existing guidance on tenants as BFPPs, and that is some language that's currently in that guidance, where if the owner of a property is a BFPP at the time the leasehold interest is acquired, but then subsequently loses, doesn't need to lose that BFPP status, the lessee would have to establish the criteria themselves to be a BFPP in 10140, with the exception of conducting all appropriate inquiries. So the new provision more or less codifies our guidance. That's one of the new conditions that's included. The other two are if the owner is a BFPP and stays a BFPP, and then, of course, the third, if the lessee or the party with the leasehold interest independently meets the criteria to be a BFPP.
Thanks, Craig. Okay. Another question about multi-purpose grants. The question is, does multi-purpose planning include planning for redevelopment or just brownfield activities? The planning that's eligible in multi-purpose for the statute is for planning activities at one or more brownfield sites in the area. So this is about planning for how can those brownfield sites be successfully cleaned up and reused. Redevelopment is part of it, but always keeping in mind the nexus to the brownfield site needs to be very clear. Okay, here's a question about multi-purpose grant. How is the area defined for the purpose of the multi-purpose grant? We will provide guidance on that when we get when we put together the RFP. That is also going to be a policy decision. So we'll make sure when we get that out to folks that it's really, that you have a clear definition of area. Another question, do you need to own property to apply for a cleanup grant?
Yes.
Yes, you do. And that's for cleanup grant. Okay, here's a question about the small and disadvantaged community. You kind of already addressed it, though, Rachel. The question is, would a current site-specific assessment grantee be eligible for a small community technical assistance grant, assuming they meet requirements?
I don't know. That's something we'll be discussing this summer, if you would have limitations on of active.
But just remind them to kind
of. Oh, right. But only states and tribes. But in terms of how they're going to propose communities and making sure communities are supportive of this effort, and whether or not we put additional restrictions on that so more people can benefit from our brownfield funding are still conversations we'll be having this summer.
Right. So the distinction here is whether of who is the subject of the grant versus who can apply for the grant. Keep in mind that these grants are part of the 128A funding program, and the eligible entities there are states and tribes. States and tribes will apply for the grants on behalf of small and disadvantaged communities, which will be the subject of the funding for the grant. So we haven't made strict determinations as to which communities, which small and disadvantaged communities may be the subject of the grant, but eligible entities are states and tribes.
Okay, question again about cleanup. Will cleanup grantees still be required to be the sole owner of a site at the time of grant application?
Yes, because they'd be the grantee.
Yes, absolutely. That has not changed. Okay, and then a question about may a coalition apply for a multi-purpose grant? I will say we are looking into this possibility and trying to figure out if that would be in a useful way to pilot the multi-purpose grant. So we haven't made a decision on that yet. Then a question about timing. So we heard that guidelines expect to be out later this year. Okay. Did I hear correctly that you expect guidelines to be out later this year as compared to last?
Yes.
We do. Next question, can you elaborate on the date of the guidelines release? No, we cannot. We wish we could. We've got a lot to sort out here. But it won't, September, as we usually, it will be later than September.
Well, we're still hoping for fall, so definitely keeping your eyes open as we move into October, November.
I think that's the end of our questions. I'm going to do one quick look back through, make sure we got everything.
While Amy's looking back, this is Patricia Evermeyer again. I just want to remind everyone, as Megan said, that we are going to be putting out a Federal Register notice to gather additional input. We will have specific questions that we're asking for our stakeholder input, and we'd appreciate if everyone pay attention to that, because your input will do a lot to inform us as we work through the provisions of the BUILD Act and thinking through how to revise our guidelines and how to shape our grant programs. So please look for the Federal Register notice. Also keep in mind we're going to post our questions on our website probably by the end of this week, and we welcome all of your input to those questions.
Great. That's it, everybody. Thank you all for joining us, and thank you for all the great questions. We really appreciate that, and we will look forward to hearing from you once the questions come out, and you can share additional thoughts with us then. All right, everyone, take care. Have a good